I wonder if you've ever heard this phrase. Christianity is full of hypocrites. This is a phrase that I heard. I was just walking around at some point. I forget, it was many, many years ago now. I note down stories at various times so that I can use them at later dates. It's great. But I was just walking along and I just heard this person say, Christianity is full of hypocrites. Has that been your experience? What's your understanding or your, view around Christianity and hypocrisy? Or another way of thinking about it, or a question that is sort of connected to it is Christianity always good? Is Christianity always good? Well, what I would say to that as a way of we work through what today is looking at is Christianity is always good, but Christians are not. Christianity itself doesn't change. The good news and the message of Jesus is always good. But unfortunately, my experience, and I'm sure many, if not most of you's experience, is that Christians don't always live up to the example of Christianity. What do we do with it? How do we live in a time where the good news is what everyone needs to experience, but actually what happens is those who represent Christ don't always match what's required. Christians are the world's example of Christianity. Christians are how people come to experience Jesus. One of the topics that will often come up, if you're talking to someone exploring faith or someone who's outside of faith and wants to have a pot shot at Christianity, is they will talk about the Crusades. The Crusades are just common fare to come up and say, look at the Crusades, that was Christians. How can you say that Christianity is good when it led to the Crusades? And it's really easy to say, like, how could those people do that in the name of Christ? And I'll be honest, when I read the history of the Crusades, I look at it and go, how on earth did those people do that? How did those people in the name of Christ do some of the atrocities that actually happened in the Crusades? And then I catch myself. There's two key words in that phrase. Those people. How easy is it to point fingers? Now, I'm not saying that I've committed the atrocities of the Crusades, because I haven't. But I know I can speak and say, I'm not always a good example of Christianity. Maybe that's a surprise and you think your past is meant to be holier than thou. I'm sorry, I will fail you if that's the view that you have. I am not always a good example. And I'm sure you know that in some of your darkest moments, you're not always a good example. Sometimes I am better at being right than I am at being an example. I know the right thing to say. I know the right thing to believe. I know the right thing that's meant to happen. But I'm not always good at being that example. We continue today our second part in our three-part series, continuation from our Hebrew series. But our Hebrew series was really about just keeping the faith. What we're spending these 3 weeks on is actually looking at how do we just take that private faith and actually live it out in a public sphere. Because as fantastic as it is to have a private faith, it's not the kind of faith that Jesus called us to. We're called to live a public faith. We're called to be known and to be seen. We're called to represent Jesus in challenging times. And so how, given what we've just spoken to, the reality that we're all going to fail at that at times, that we're all going to mess up, that we're all going to actually leave something to be desired, how do we best go about doing this? What's most important when it comes to living a public faith? So we're going to look at the letter of 1 Peter, one of Jesus' closest disciples. And so he's writing this letter to the church that he's been to, he's visited, been a part of, and he's wanting to remind them some really important things about how they can live out their faith in the world they find themselves in. Starting at chapter 2, it says this. Therefore, rid yourselves of all malice and of all deceit, hypocrisy, envy, and slander of every kind. Like newborn babies, crave pure spiritual milk, so that by it you may grow up in your salvation. Now that you have tasted that the Lord is good. Some fairly strong words from Peter there at the start. Get rid of malice, get rid of deceit, get rid of hypocrisy, get rid of envy, get rid of slander. Why does Peter even need to say this? Because many, if not most of us, would say, we know the church should not have those things. That followers of Jesus wouldn't have malice. That followers of Jesus wouldn't have deceit. That followers of Jesus wouldn't be hypocritical. They wouldn't be envious. They wouldn't slander. Except that followers of Jesus are human. Peter had to say this because these things existed in the church that he was speaking to. Peter had to remind them that these are not things to be a part of a follower's life. But the reason he has to say it is because it existed. In fact, I think many, if not most, churches would have to say this at various times because the church is meant to be a group of broken people that have been saved and recognize who Jesus is, that are coming together to grow in and through him. But at the same time, it is imperative for the church to recognize the place that it plays in a public faith. And so Peter reminds them, don't let these things cloud your witness. You might be really good at some of the good things in church, but don't let slander be part of your church's story. Don't let malice. Don't worry about what else is going on elsewhere. For you and your people, get rid of malice. Get rid of deceit. Get rid of hypocrisy. Work together to support one another to ensure that these things aren't a part of your church. How do we do that? Like, these things are challenging. I don't know if any of those are your particular weakness, but then there are so many other things that we know. Well, actually, Peter gives a really good idea, a really good example of how and why we would do this. Because he ends in verse 3 by saying, now that you have tasted that the Lord is good. Our experience of the goodness of God acts as the ongoing motivation to live good lives for him. This is where it's really important to recognize that it's by grace that you're saved, that you don't get rid of these things for your salvation. It's because you are saved that you can now spend your time working and honing to try and bring yourself to be in line with who God made you to be. Because you have seen, you've tasted, you recognize what it is that Jesus did for you on the cross. And so partly we need to continue to be reminded of that time. We need to be reminded of what we have experienced in God, to be reminded of what he saved us from, to be reminded of just how good he is. And then to let that be the motivation that draws us to again and again come back to him. Skipping on down to verse 9, Peter says this, but you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession, that you may declare the praises of him who called you out of darkness into this wonderful light. Once you were not a people, but now you are the people of God. Once you had not received mercy, but now you have received mercy. This little section here is such a dense passage. There's such a great picture of what the people of God are. You're a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a special possession, a holy nation. Peter's reminding them of just how significant the church is, of just how important the role the church plays, of how special the church is. And part of why he's wanting to do this is to remind them that they are always the church. There used to be a phrase that was fairly common, the queen is always the queen. Now, of course, that's because for most of our generations, it was being a queen. It's now a king, but this is still true. The king is never not the king. King Charles, it still takes me a while to say that. I'm still used to being Prince Charles. King Charles is never not the king. No matter where he goes, he is King Charles. He doesn't get to take his crown off and put it down and say, you know, for today, I'm just Charlie. I can't ever imagine King Charles calling himself Charlie. Maybe he does. Christians are always Christians. We don't get to take our little crown off and actually spend a day of just being Joe Blow. As followers of Jesus, we are always representing him. And everything we're doing, everything we say, will be looked at by the world around us. Every Facebook post that we add, every place that we visit, everything we do will be seen and will reflect on the person of Jesus. And it can be a high standard to hold at times, and it can be tiring at times to always have to. Remember, this is why we have grace, this is why we have forgiveness, this is why we can come and we can ask God to say, God, I missed the mark this week. But it's a reminder that we are always in that role. We're always representing a very special relationship that God has with the church. But it continues on. Dear friends, I urge you, as foreigners and exiles, to abstain from sinful desires which wage war against your soul. Live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits us. The first point I want to raise here is as he's talking to this people group. So he's talking to a group of people that are in the Greek world at the time. But he's wanting to remind them, and he uses the language of foreigners and exiles. Not because they need to come back to Jerusalem, not because that's where home is. But it's a reminder to the early church, and the early church kind of got this idea that this earth is not our home. That at the end of time, there's going to be a new heaven and a new earth. Exactly what that looks like, there's lots of theological discussion, and that's a sermon for a different day. But one thing we always have to be reminded of is we can get really focused on this life and this world, on our house and on our car and on our things and our jobs and the things that we have here and now. And part of what Peter is wanting to do to the church at the time and what God says to us today is to remember we're foreigners. We're exiles. What we have now is not what we will actually have for the vast majority of our existence, because we will go on into eternity. Don't get so caught up and so lost in this life, in this world, and the material things that we have in this place. Don't get so caught up in the things that distract you and draw you away from God. The things that wage war. And he uses very strong language. He doesn't say that sin just nibbles at you. War is atrocious. War is horrific. And that is what sin is like. It will wage war against you. It will claw at you. It will try and grab you and bring you in. And so he wants to remind us the things that draw our attention in this life are not worth what they call us to. We're foreigners. We're exiles. This is not our home. But then there's a couple of other really important things that he speaks to here. First, he says, though they accuse you of doing wrong. I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but have you ever had someone accuse you of doing wrong? Someone who is outside the faith, who looks at you as a follower of Jesus and say, what are you doing? How can you do that? How can you believe that? How can you say that? there's two things we need to take from this particular section that are really important. First one is this. Don't be surprised when the world around you looks at how you follow Jesus and accuses you of doing wrong, of not meeting what their expectations are. Don't be surprised if they're watching you. Don't be surprised if they're looking for you to stuff up. Don't be surprised if perhaps you're not making a mistake, but actually they're going to say you do. Right? Many who are outside of faith are going to look in and try and point out things. They're going to try and pull holes in the Christian faith. They're going to try and pull holes in your faith. So don't be surprised. Peter's saying to them, they're going to accuse you of doing wrong. Don't be surprised. But then more importantly, don't let the accusation be true. Unless the accusation is, oh, they follow someone who died. Like, unless the accusation of following faithfully something of the faith. Don't let the accusation be true. As best as you can, live a life that is above reproach. And if and when you stuff up, be the first to put your hand up. Be the first to say, yeah, I stuffed it. Yeah, I missed the mark there. Yes, you're right, I was wrong. Don't try and deflect it and say, no, you've got the different person. See, that's a wig on that person. Try and deflect it away. So don't be surprised to be accused of doing wrong, and it may not be correct. Don't let it be true. As best as you can. And who is it Peter's saying here? Who is it that's meant to live such good lives? Who's the focus of Peter writing to? Well, it's followers of Jesus. Another way that I find that I think Christians and the church gets distracted sometimes is we get surprised when people that aren't following Jesus don't follow Jesus. Like, I know that sounds a bit strange, but we get a bit surprised when the world around us doesn't look like the world's meant to. We get a bit surprised when people who haven't decided to follow Jesus as Lord don't live for him as Lord, don't make the choices that we would like them to make. And part of what Peter is actually wanting to speak to the church that he's writing to is, to some degree, you don't need to worry too much about what they're doing. They need to know Jesus. Because if and when they know Jesus, then they might start to make some different choices. But for now, let's make sure that the church lives the way of Jesus. Let's make sure that as followers of Jesus, we're living up to that call. Because if we do a good job of living up to the call of Jesus, the gospel wins out. The early church was part of and built up to Rome falling, the greatest civilization of its time. By faithful Christians living out the teachings of Jesus, Rome tumbled. And it wasn't because they pointed out to the Romans and said, you need to do this, you need to stop doing that, you. No, Christians faithfully followed Jesus. And they built a church that grew and grew and grew, and the representation of that church in that world made such a difference. Don't be surprised when those who don't follow Jesus don't follow Jesus. But then we get a really important and subtle reminder, because this can happen. 1 Peter 2:13 to 17 says this: submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human authority, whether to the emperor as the supreme authority or to the governors, who are sent by him to punish those who do wrong and commend those who do right. For it is God's will that by doing good, you should silence the ignorant talk of foolish people. Live as free people, but do not use your freedom as a cover up for evil. Live as God's slaves. Show proper respect to everyone. Love the family of believers. Fear God. Honor the emperor. What was starting to go on at the time was Christians were starting to say, we don't need to follow the rules of Rome. We don't need to follow the laws of the land. We don't need to do what is going on here because we are not part of this kingdom. And again, it's easy for us to point to that and go, oh, that's that's a bit funny, but I've actually got a modern day example. There's a very recent example of exactly what this kind of looks like in our contemporary culture to what was going on at the time. There was an interview with Warren Treadway. If you don't know who Warren Treadway is, he was an AFL footballer. He played for Port Adelaide. He's a board member of Port Adelaide currently, so this is causing him a little bit of grief as we speak. And he went to court because he was sacked by Channel 9 in South Australia. He was their newsreader for a period of time. He claimed unfair dismissal, was found against him, decided to appeal it, and so court costs got awarded. He had to pay the court costs. And so the time has come where he's meant to have paid these court costs. And this is his response. I didn't make this up. It fits too nicely, but this is his response. I think it was just this week, as to why he can't pay his debt. I answer to the name Warren Treadway of South Australia, a private man. My yes be yes, my no be no. He even throws in a Bible verse, Treadway said in court. I am not an entity, legal person, citizen, resident, or any form of creature of statute. I have not been provided with any material facts or evidence that show there exists any lawful gold or silver coin of substance in common circulation upon which to close, pay, and extinguish an account. I believe sincerely that none exists. I believe no gold or silver coin in circulation can pay a debt. Now, I'm hoping that everyone like you reads this and goes, what a load of hogwash. What a load of baloney. Like, what are you saying? What are you saying, in case you don't quite, I'll spill it out, is he doesn't believe current currency is actually legal. That current tender cannot pay a debt because it's not legal tender. Now, what legal standing he has, I don't know. But this is what there were people in the early church were starting to say and do. Things like this. We don't need to follow Rome because we follow the laws of God. We don't need to do this. When Jesus is asked, and Jesus is actually the guide for how we would answer these sort of questions. They ask Jesus, should we pay our taxes? And what does Jesus say? He says, give to Caesar what is Caesar's, give to God what is God's. And Peter is reminding the church at the time, you might be exiles, you might be foreigners, your home may not be here, but don't use that as an excuse to actually put a bad target on your back by not being good local citizens. Don't let the fact that, now, he's not saying, go and break God's laws to follow the local law of the land. So if there's a local law that goes against what God would have you do, he's not saying, all right, follow the law of the land. But don't use your Christianity as a means to get out of following everyday common courtesies that are part of our culture today. Don't let your Christian faith be what you claim is why you can't do the standard things of the world around us, because that will stand out, and it won't stand out in ways that lead people to Jesus. Be good local citizens. Pay your taxes. Pay your dues. Pay whatever it is you need to pay. Follow and be governed by the laws that are in circulation. But hold firm on areas where it does go against the gospel. Hold firm in areas where it does actually go. I mean, Warren Treadway could pay his debts without doing anything crazy. He could just use the money that he has. But that's what was going on. And it leads to a bad witness. Don't let that be what you do. Though we do not belong here, we do live here. Respect and honor the rule of law. He goes on, and again, because Peter likes to get contentious. It wasn't contentious at the time, it's contentious today. Slaves, in reverent fear of God, submit yourselves to your masters, not only to those who are good and considerate, but also to those who are harsh. For it is commendable if someone bears up under the pain of unjust suffering, because they are conscious of God. But how is it to your credit if you receive a beating for doing wrong and endure it? But if you suffer for doing good and you endure it, this is commendable before God. Of course, the accusation or the question that's raised here is Peter condoning slavery? Is this another example where the Bible says slavery is good? I would actually put to you that he's not condoning slavery. But remember, at the time, they weren't looking to topple Rome. It actually wasn't on their radar that they were going to be turning over the way that the world actually worked at the time. What they were trying to work out is, how do we be good representatives of Christ and good citizens in this place and time? I don't think Peter is condoning slavery here, but he is wanting to give slaves an honest approach to how they can best represent Jesus within their slave context. Because it wasn't realistic for Christian slaves to expect to become masters overnight. It actually wasn't realistic to expect that just because they started to follow Jesus, they would all of a sudden be freed from slavery. And of course, the Bible was and has been used across the centuries to lead towards the eventual abolition of much slavery, though the reality is there's actually as many slaves in the world today as there was at any period of time. We just don't hear much about it anymore. It's just in different parts of the world. But what Peter is wanting to say to slaves is there's actually a role that you can play. Because everyone expects you as a slave to actually go against your masters. Everyone expects you as a slave to actually not suffer well. And that it will actually stand out to those around you when you don't act the same way. When as you're beaten and as you receive things, it's not right, it's not just, but how you experience that will actually speak far more powerfully to those around you than you imagine. And how slaves actually approach their faith in Christianity spoke to the rest of the church. Because in the church, this was one of the big things going on at the time. Slaves were welcome. And masters would bring their slaves. And Christian masters didn't immediately release all slaves. It was a significant part of the culture at the time. But how it was actually addressed. Now, hopefully Christian masters weren't beating their slaves. Hopefully Christian masters were giving their slaves the best experience they could have, and actually being a slave to a Christian master became a good representative of Christ. But he's reminding them, the way that you are enslaved, the way that you live these things, this will impact those around you. Let them see the way that you do this. And he gives us a reason why. Because on the one hand, it's really easy to say, oh, but we really need to move away from that. But actually, he draws us to Jesus. The best thing to do when you're making an argument about faith is find a way of connecting it to Jesus. Really good pointer right there. And he says this, to this you were called, because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps. He committed no sin. No deceit was found in his mouth. When they hurled their insults at him, he did not retaliate. When he suffered, he made no threats. Instead, he entrusted himself to him who judges justly. He himself bore our sins in his body on the cross so that we might die to sins and live for righteousness. By his wounds you have been healed. So one of the questions we have to ask every now and then and remind ourselves is, did Jesus deserve what happened to him? Absolutely not. Was it right what happened to Jesus? Absolutely not. And yet if Jesus hadn't borne that, we wouldn't sit here today with the hope that we have. If you can read through the Bible and come out at the end with a version of Christianity that doesn't involve a level of suffering at some point, I think you've skipped some pages. Because Jesus is the model. What Jesus experienced is what we should expect to experience. And how we face that will speak to the world around us. Does that mean that we become doormats and just accept all suffering? Absolutely not. Again, there's plenty of other scriptures that speak to that. But just don't be surprised when suffering is part of the experience. Because what stands out time and time again, as you look at the life of Jesus, and you look at the life of the church is at its best, not when it's known for what's right, but when it's known for living it out. The power of witness is more effective than the power of rightness. Some of the church is really good at saying what is right, and it lives the other way. When the church is living it out, that's when it speaks to the world around it. When the church is known for its action, for its purpose, for accurately representing Christ, that's when it has power. Not just when it's right. The power of witness is more effective than the power of rightness. I just want to give you a four-part how to do public Christianity well. This is not my work. This is the work of Dr. Natasha Moore from the Center for Public Christianity. And so she has a bit of a four-part way of approaching when different things come your way. So firstly, one of the first things you need to do to actually do public Christianity well is concede. Concede where the accusations are true. One of the things that gets Christians into trouble is when they do something stupid or something wrong, and then they try and actually, oh, no, I didn't mean it that way, I did it this way, and you're sort of back and forward, and the other side can see you go, no, just call it out and say, yeah, I stuffed it. I concede I didn't live up to what was expected there. Concede if the accusation is true. Don't try and walk your way out of it. But then the second section is to defend. Don't just accept or follow a falsehood. Take a stand. Engage and challenge the assertions well. So when the accusation is not true, don't become a doormat. Don't just go, yeah, I'll just take that because I'll take one for the team here. No, in that instance, defend. Be firm, be fair. Raise what is actually going on. Don't just accept the falsehoods. The next step is to critique. Understand and undermine the argument that you are speaking to. If it's opposed to Christianity, it is our job to know the alternative. It is part of our job to be able to publicly express the alternative well. So when there is someone who's, you know, saying, oh, Christianity is a bunch of blah, or this is what this is about, actually be able to push back and learn and take some time. What is this argument about? What's going on here? How can I critique this well and not just let that stand? And then ultimately commend. Commend the person of Jesus. Find ways to bring your arguments and your discussions and your public expressions with others to the person of Jesus. And a really easy picture to sort of take if you want to think through how do we do all of this well? How do we publicly live out? Or how do we know that this actually works the way it is? You don't measure the worth of a musical composer based on the worst performance of their piece. One of the challenges for a composer is they're not always and often aren't the one that's going to play the music. In many ways, the Christian faith, God plays the role of composer. He has composed a way to live. If I were to play Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, you wouldn't think much of God. If I was to be here right now, I don't have a musical bone in my body. I can clap my hands on beat most of the time. That's about it. If I was to play Beethoven's Fifth Symphony, you wouldn't think much of God. But if someone who is proficient pianist were to play, you'd be left praising the composer. The good thing about the Christian faith is you don't need to be musical, though it helps in some places. It's not something that you're either built with the skill of being able to follow Jesus or you're never going to be able to. We can all learn to play in tune with God. We can all take time to hone our life instrument and let the tune that we're playing represent the composer well. And that's what we do. When Christians play in tune with God as the composer, Christianity makes an incredible difference. When Christians live out of tune with God, harm can and is done. So let's do public Christianity well. Let's learn to play in tune with the composer and live out our faith well in the world around us. Let's pray. Father, I pray that you would help us this week to live well for you. Lord, where that doesn't happen, I pray you would help us to be the first to concede it, to come before you on our knees and to pray for your forgiveness. Lord, I pray you'd help us in our workplaces, in our families, in our neighborhoods, in our local shopping centers, wherever it is that we might find ourselves, to play your tune, to live well for you, to represent you well to a world in need, that slowly, over time, they might see that you are good. We thank you for this in Jesus' name. Amen.